This is Radio Influence.
Welcome to the Wednesday, October 16, 2019 edition of the MMA Report podcast with Dale Calvon. I am Jason Ford, and this week's edition of the podcast is presented by Roman. Later on in the show, we're going to tell you how you can get a free online visit and free two-day shipping from Roman, as they've got a special offer for the MMA Report podcast listener. And this week's podcast will come to you in five rounds. In the opening round, we're going to talk about what happened on Tuesday at the California State Athletic Commission hearing, as two interesting notes coming out of that one with Aspen Ladd losing her appeal to get her loss to Jermaine de Rimondebe overturned to a no contest, and the commission passing a rule that would cancel a fight if a fighter is over 15% above their contracted weight on day of the fight. Very interesting stuff coming out of there. In round two, we're going to recap what happened here in my hometown of Tampa, Florida, last Saturday, UFC Tampa. We'll talk about Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Kron Gracie, Nico Price, Mike Davis versus Thomas Gifford, and many others. Then it'll be in round number three, it'll be the interview portion of the podcast. You're going to hear from two fighters that are going to be a part of Valor FC 65 on Saturday, Morgan Hickam and Kyle Lee. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Aileen Villalobos, who is a fighter out of Jackson Wink, as she is starting her MMA career. Then in round number four, we're going to preview Friday's UFC Boston. That's right, Friday's UFC Boston coming up here. And also, then in the last round, we'll talk about some MMA news, John Jones, Conor McGregor, and the PFL, as we're not talking about what happened in the cage. We're talking about what happened between two managers. Daniel, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jason. I'm glad that you made your way back to the United States of America after spending some time in England or the old Buccaneers game, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Had a good trip over there. Actually got to see the O2 Arena as we were staying right next to it. Very cool concept they have over there at the O2 Arena, where about the best way to describe for anyone who's been there is you've got a huge indoor complex. The arena's in the middle, and everything outside the arena is bars, restaurants, shops. The only thing that was kind of weird, like all the restaurants closed pretty much like at 10 o'clock at night, which was kind of weird. But no, man, had a good time, seeing Tottenham. It's not Tottenham, it's Tottenham. And nice little stadium they had over there. Did a lot of walking from where our locker room was into where our broadcast booth was. But no, man, it was a good time over there. And it rained a lot, which I guess we're pretty much used to living here in the South. But yeah, had a good time. Got back Monday morning and really didn't have any jet lag. So I kind of stayed up all day Monday. I slept a lot on the plane. You know, when the pilot came on as we were leaving London, said our flight time back to Tampa is 9 hours and 47 minutes. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that sounds like the length of a UFC fight card. So that is a long time. I can't imagine being in one seat for 10 hours.
And so as I'm over there, I'm like, all right, let me pop up my ESPN app. But, you know, the phone realizes that I'm in the UK. So everything ESPN Plus was blocked. So couldn't watch that. I was able to watch a little bit of the UFC Tampa prelims on Fight Pass. Watch those fights all after the fact, but we'll get into it. It's been an interesting couple of days in mixed martial arts, after what happened last weekend, but really a very interesting day yesterday, in California at the California State Athletic Commission hearing. And, you know, the first thing, and I didn't even realize that Aspen Ladd was attempting to overturn her TKO loss against Jermaine de Rimondebe. Mark Armani did a great job of covering that meeting on Tuesday, and my first thought was like, okay, when I realized she was doing this, I said, let me go back and watch the original fight. And I watched it. I mean, obviously, it doesn't take you very long because it was 16 seconds. And I was like, man, I'd really be surprised she gets this thing overturned. It's something we just don't see on the regulatory side. I mean, we've seen some really dumb appeals of recently of noting where Edson Barboza trying to get his split decision loss against Paul Felder overturned, which, you know, it's not going to happen. And then the most ridiculous one is Diego Lima's team trying to get his split decision win overturned to a unanimous decision win. But it actually was a 3-2 vote. Two of the five commissioners thought that it should be overturned. And I think her manager, Aspen Ladd's manager, in this meeting said this, quote, "This is about are women being treated equally in the sport of mixed martial arts? This is how I feel about this. And of course, noting that maybe if it was a male fighter, that Herb Dean would have let the fight go on. I thought also the interesting note was one of the commissioners noting about maybe, you know, mentioning about anti-discrimination in this one. And I think that at the end of the day, Daniel, I think that the California State Athletic Commission has opened themselves up a lot here. I think that they are now going to find themselves in women's MMA fights, that we're going to start seeing more TKO losses being appealed because of what happened on Tuesday. But I will say this. I do think in the back of all of our minds that sometimes that maybe we do want women's fights to end quicker than a male fight, if we're just being honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to dig in here. I think there is gender discrimination for female fighters, specifically regarding violence, for sure. I think that's common and that's absolutely real, in that I have a higher tolerance for watching Junior Dos Santos get the heck beat out of him by Cain Velasquez more so than a female fighter. I think there is that bias that we come in with. I think that's changing, but I still think that's there. I won't deny that. In fact, I will say that that's absolutely the case. And the problem with this situation is it is literally impossible, unless he admits it, to prove that Herb Dean discriminated the gender of these fighters, and that was the reason why he stopped the fight early. Because poor stoppages knows no gender. Poor stoppages have happened to plenty of male fighters over the years, and incredibly similar stoppages have happened to male fighters. Kind of when I watched this, when I rewatched this fight, this looks like a classic case of the shot hits Ladd, and Ladd looks like she's completely out on the descent. Herb Dean reacts immediately to that fact that she looks out cold. And as he approaches her, the stoppage, she does make that recovery. And that to me is what happened here. Herb Dean saw a fighter that was out cold, goes to stop, kind of realizes as he's stopping the fight that she's on all fours and may recover, but it's too late. And that was my diagnosis of this stoppage. So I think to make it about gender discrimination was really unfair to Herb Dean. It really was, because it's impossible to prove that was the case. And I don't think that was the case in this instance. Now, it was incredibly unfair to Herb Dean, but that may have been the smartest play this manager could have done. Because as you mentioned, we are talking about a 3-2 vote. As outrageous as it may seem that Aspen Ladd appealed this, she was one vote away from it getting overturned, I believe. So it's not the craziest thing, but it reminds me of like the Chewbacca defense in South Park, in that what happened here was this became a very we had a very emotional argument that may not have been related at all to the stoppage, that dominated the discussion regarding the stoppage. And then it's like, oh, so you're not going to vote for this? So what, you're going to discriminate against women? Like then you find yourself in some hot water. So this is a two-pronged issue. Honest to God, if your goal was to get this overturned, it was probably a smart approach by the manager, but I don't think it was a fair one to Herb Dean.
Yeah, I mean, and as Mark Raimondi notes in his article, and I want to apologize because I'm probably going to butcher the commissioner's last name, Martha Shin Yerquezi. I've probably butchered the hell out of that. But what she did during this hearing was she showed other UFC fights officiated by Dean between male fighters that Dean allowed the fight to continue after heavy damage was done by one of the competitors. She said she believed Dean stopped the bout between Ladd and Deronomy after just one punch violated anti-discrimination laws in California, where she said, quote, "This is not okay, even if it's not intentional. She might have lost anyway, but if you give her the chance to lose on her own way, that's why she's a fighter." And it should be noted that the commissioners voted along gender lines. Interesting.
So this is a tough one, man. I really feel strongly in this one that And I'm always on the side of like, yeah, let's stand up for all people, everyone, equality. I believe in it big time. This is the one instance where I feel like again, watching this sport for a very long time, I feel like it's unfair to pick one or two fights to use as an example, because we see so many fights every single weekend, and we see just a mirror, just so many different types of stoppages, late stoppages, early stoppages. I feel as though if you took all female fights and all the male fights, female I would assume so if we did that study. Now, the issue here is this particular fight, I think, could have happened if both combatants were males.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's – we have to be honest with ourselves, and I think there are times that you look at female fights, and maybe if it was a male fight, maybe the fight does go longer. But I think that the California State Athletic Commission has opened themselves up a lot here. I think we're going to see a lot more appeals, and the fact of – you know, I'm shocked that it went 3-2. I'm really surprised it went there. I mean, I think that go back and watch the fight, and the way Aspen Ladd fell, I just feel like if a male fighter fell in that way, I think a lot of referees would have jumped in. But who knows? Now, the other big news to come out of that California State Athletic Commission is about weight cutting, where they California, and it's going to take about a year for this actually to truly be into law, but a fight will be canceled if one of the fighters is over 15% of their contracted weight. Now, you may recall that what is happening when there are events in California, you have your official weigh-ins, you know, the day before the fights. You know, typically, you know, those weigh-ins are from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific time or local time. And they all get weighed in the next day. And the commission ends up releasing those figures of how much the fighter is over. And the California State Athletic Commission and our executive director, Andy Foster, has been a pioneer in trying to, what I would call, changing the culture of mass weight cutting in MMA. And what they did on Tuesday was they passed a rule that, as I mentioned, would cancel a fight if a competitor weighed more than 15%, and noted that this new rule was passed 5-0. And Andy Foster said, to me, that's a health and safety issue. It's sanctioned cheating when talking about these massive weight cuts. And I know that this is a hot topic, Daniel, in the mixed martial arts community. When I've talked to regulators about this over the past couple of years, I mean, look, this is, you know, they all have this same fear. And I think it's the same fear that both of us have, is that their fear is someone is going to die trying to make weight. I mean, we have seen countless fighters step on the scale and you're just like, oh my God, that fighter looks awful. I mean, like, think of like when Conor McGregor was making 145, just how awful he looked on the scale. I mean, Aspen Ladd, her last fight, she looked awful on the scale, and she ended up, for a bantamweight matchup the next day, she weighed 159 pounds. I understand why fighters and managers and coaches may not like this rule, but they have to understand why the California State Athletic Commission is going this route.
Yeah, I certainly understand it. I kind of applaud the California State Athletic Commission for going this route. And the fact that it was 5-0 probably shows you a lot of Andy Foster's probably got a good influence in that commission, in that this is a controversial issue. But to get a unanimous vote here shows that they were willing to listen to him. And honestly, they probably should. I mean, this dude is absolutely one of the more important figures in the world of MMA. So I think this is a big move, because we are talking about, this is huge. This is fights get canceled. This is UFC cards already have enough trouble staying the way they are without this. In addition to like injury callouts, we're going to have fights canceled due to weight. And when this is implemented, this is going to happen if they hold true to it, because 15% is not a lot. When it comes to the current culture of weight cutting, most fighters, I believe, weigh more than 15%. than they do on weigh-in day. Could be wrong on that.
The note was that according to the California State Athletic Commission's data, between January 2019 and October 2019, out of a total of 285 bouts, 28 MMA bouts saw fighters weighing more than 15% of their contracted weight. Now, to note, in boxing, there have only been 9 fights out of 570 this year with fighters above that mark. So, I mean, look, and you talk to regulars.
That's crazy. It's only 10%?
Yeah, they'll say this. They'll say that it is – weight cutting is a MMA problem. It is not a boxing problem. It's something you don't see. You know, I think that when I see fighters who are come out against it, my initial thought is – that's because you're gaining back more than 15% of your weight. I mean, this is, I mean, look, whether you like what Annie Foster's doing or you don't, this is a health and safety issue. This is why they're doing this. And I think that for what Andy is trying to do to succeed, he needs two men to back him, Dana White and Scott Coker.
Yeah. At least Dana White.
Obviously Dana's got to be the key figure. If Dana came out tomorrow and said, I completely support what Andy Foster is doing, that would be a huge message sent, not just to the MMA community, but particular his contracted fighters that, you know what, we're going to try to end this culture of massive weight cutting because, I mean, look, we all have the same fear, and the fear is someone's going to lose trying to cut, is going to die trying to cut weight.
Yeah, I totally see that, and I am so surprised that the number is 10% of those fights. I figure the number would have been way higher, just because when I think of 15%, I mean, we're talking like if you weigh – oh, actually, that is kind of a lot, because if you weigh 170, we're talking about weighing in at like 22 pounds
so
over.
So for a 171 welterweight fight, you know, non-title fight, so you can weigh 171 with 1 pound allowance, you could not weigh more than 195.4 on fight day.
You know what? That's pretty reasonable.
I do feel it's reasonable as well. I mean, look, I commend what Annie Foster is trying to do. I mean, look, he's, you know, I think there are a lot of people on the regulatory side that want to back him on this, but I think ultimately it's going to take the UFC to ultimately get there. And, you know, it's just, we hope that it doesn't take a tragic event for things to change. I mean, of course, you know, Daniel, weight cutting was a little bit of a topic last week after we did the show. It's funny. We get done recording the show Wednesday morning and, heading over to the fighter hotel. And I get a call like, "Hey man, are you hearing you want to maybe out of the fight?" I'm like, you know, Daniel, my first thought was like, son of a, we just got done recording the podcast.
I know. It happens all the time with us, man. It happens all the time.
Guarantee you, if something's going to happen to a UFC event, it's going to happen Wednesday about 9-10 o'clock in the morning East Coast time.
As soon as we're done recording, for reals. And it's going to happen in California in a year from now.
Oh, totally. You know,
some big fights. By the way, the one last point I would add, one thing I don't want to see with this is people cutting weight the day of the fight.
Yeah, that was something Andy Foster kind of mentioned as well, is hoping that that's not going to allude to, you know, fighters going through two weight cuts. But, you know, look, I support what Andy Foster is trying to do. We'll see what happens. But, you know, but speaking about Ioana Jędrzejczyk, and I know she's come out and kind of talked about various aspects. And, you know, one of the things the UFC tells fighters is that, look, if there's going to be an issue and, you know, 2 weeks out, contact us 2 weeks out. Let's see what we can do to kind of, you know, ramify everything and make sure this fight happens. And I remember when I got to the fighter hotel on Wednesday, I saw Ioana, and I looked at her. I'm kind of like, well, looks like she's going to fight. I mean, she had the look like, hey, I'm here to fight. You know, so it was, you know, she does go out there and overall a solid performance by Ioana outside of that choke attempt that Michelle Waterson had in. You know, the last minute of the third round, really, I don't think there was ever a moment in that fight that I was like, hey, I think Michelle Watterson's going to be able to come back and do this. But it does really make things interesting at 115 if you're the UFC, because you have to sit there and say, okay, do we trust that Ioana can make 115 healthy if we put her in a title fight? Or do you want new blood in there to challenge Zhang Weili?
I think, look, if you're the UFC, you got to fall in love with the idea of Tatiana Suarez. I mean, she's just an unbelievable talent. And I think that new blood is super exciting. But that old blood is pretty dang exciting, too, because the thing is, Joanna Jędrzejczyk is absolutely a star in the women's strawweight division, whatever that means in particular, because it's not like she's a mega star, but she's definitely one of the biggest stars they have in the women's strawweight division, if not the biggest one. So there's a lot of value there. And you put her in the cage with Zhang Weili, and it's going to get eyeballs, and people are going to watch, and that's going to build up Zhang Weili, especially if she wins there. So when I look at Joanna, I mean, she is absolutely a big-time value for the top end of this division because she allows this division to stand out. She allows those fights to matter. People will watch a Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight because they know how good she was. And she has a really good personality in terms of, like, charisma. So this was a statement win for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She needed it in the worst way imaginable. She has really been in a rut since her championship run. And this was a fight where it was a return to form. And when you watch this woman's strawweight fight, you could tell one fighter used to fight at flyweight and one used to fight at atomweight. That was evident, as Watterson looked pretty small against Jędrzejczyk, but it was more about the disparity in the striking skill, the clinchability, and whatnot. And this was just an overwhelming dominant victory for Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and she was in the cage with the top 10 women's strawweight. So it was a big win for Joanna. I think it's likely that she will eventually get a championship opportunity, could even be next, but I wouldn't be surprised if she gets one more fight. But if I had to lock in an answer, I think she gets a championship fight.
Yeah, when you look at that top five at 115 pounds, you know, when you're going at the UFC.com rankings, which, well, we can, you know, it is what it is. Let's just leave it at that. You got Jessica Andrade as a former champion, so obviously, you know, they're not going to give her an immediate rematch. Then you got Rose Namajunas, and, you know, we'll see when Rose does decide to come back. Then we got Tatiana Suarez, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and then number five is Nina Ansaroff, and of course, Nina is planning to take the next year off as her and Amanda Nunes are attempting to have a baby. So, you know, that kind of puts her out of the equation. So, it wouldn't surprise me if they go Joanna. And I think stylistically, that would be a fun fight to sit there and watch between those two fighters. So, we'll see what happens there. And for Michelle Watterson, obviously, go back to the drawing board. And, you know, I know last week on the podcast, I thought that was a validation-type fight for her, and she just couldn't get past it. Co-main event, apologies to Cub Swanson for, you know, counting you out in that one. A fun fight between him and Cron Gracie. Cron Gracie thinking he won that fight?
How the heck did he think he won that fight? That was a striking display for Cub Swanson. I mean, Cron Gracie impressed me because he had a huge step up in competition. This guy went from, like, having six or five fights or something like that, goes in there against Cub Swanson, is forced to stand and trade with him, and doesn't die. In fact, lands a shot or two, but is clearly outstruck. Dude's crazy for thinking he won.
Yeah, I mean, just absolutely crazy. But great performance there by Cub Swanson. Nico Priceman does it again with a knockout from his back. And, man, just that upkick knockout. I watched it after the fact, and the sound that you hear as that foot connects with James Vick, and I forget who it was with that noted this, but basically it was like, hey, James Vick needs to take off about a year, and he needs to stop sparring because obviously there's some chin issues there, and man, but what a knockout by Nico Price.
Yeah, I mean, there may be chin issues, but that was the sound. I mean, that sound was crazy. If anybody got caught with that kick, there was lights out 90-90. What a win for Nico Price. For Vick, again, three knockout losses in his last four losses, which are his last four fights. That's a rough look. Probably needs some time off because he really started his UFC career with an awesome run. I mean, he piled win after win after win. Ultimately, though, he's in a big-time rut, so he needs some time off for sure. Nico Price, on the other hand, I think Nico Price is slowly but surely rising up my ranks when it comes to most entertaining fighters. When he's in the cage, either he's going to get knocked out or his opponent will. He's an awesome welterweight to watch, and it was a spectacular upkick knockout victory.
Yeah, just an unbelievable knockout there. You know, really, then the other other big note of this fight card, obviously, which ended up becoming really the talk of this, was Mike Davis's knockout victory in the third round against Thomas Gifford, where, you know, look, I had a chance to talk to Thomas last week. I've now interviewed Thomas two different times. And, you know, last week on the podcast, you heard about, you know, 15 minutes of our conversation. But I can tell you, me and Thomas probably talked for another 15 or 20 minutes before and after our conversation was over. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I kind of the takeaway is, you know, hey, you know what, I want to go out on my shield in the fight. I got to look at the referee in this one, Daniel. And I think it's interesting that it was said on the broadcast that the Florida State Boxing Commission decided to pull him from the Nico Price and James Vick fight, which, you know, we see how that went and how he handled it in that situation. But, you know, the referee is in there to protect the fighter. And I know I have got a ton of respect for Mark Montoya. And I think that for a majority of the fighters out there, I do believe that they want their coach to handle the situation the way Mark Montoya does. We may not agree with it, but I think that's the mentality that a lot of coaches has. But to me, when you go back and watch that fight, there's just moments where you sit there and go, as the referee, like, what did Thomas Gifford do to you, man?
Yeah, man, that fight should have been stopped. I mean, Thomas Gifford fought with a lot of heart, but it was clear Mike Davis was just the superior fighter, and he was doing so much damage, so this was a tough one to watch. The commentary was on point in that they didn't sugarcoat around it. It was clear. This fight should have been stopped. And, you know, Mike Davis looked good. Absolutely. The bad showing by Montoya. And, I mean, all I got to say, man, is we see it time and again. And, I mean, this is a classic case of person he should have.
Yeah, man, it was just, it's tough to watch. I mean, I think that's about the best way I can put it, Daniel. It's just, and I think particularly it was tough for me to watch just because I've got a chance to get to know Thomas over the past 6 months or so. And so it was just really brutal to watch. I mean, because he just didn't have an answer to the speed of Mike Davis. And Mike Davis was just landing some strikes at, I mean, look, the chin that Thomas Gifford has on him, no one's ever going to question that kid's chin. Jesus Christ. I mean, he took everything that Mike Davis had to offer. But, but also I got to say, I thought Michael Bisping's commentary on this fight was superb. And, you know, Michael Bisping, he is really becoming one of my favorite analysts to listen to. Just because, you know, obviously, you know, being a fighter, and I just thought he was very pinpoint on that. But, I mean, let's be honest about it. You know, we talk about we're in a culture of MMA where we are very, you know, okay with massive weight cutting. We're also in a culture of not throwing in the towel. Now, it's not in the unified rules of MMA about throwing in a towel, but if a corner throws in a towel, the referee is going to honor it. I think if you look at Mark Montoya, the fact that also Thomas Gifford's dad was in his corner, and I thought Bisping was very spot on where he's like, look, the fighter's not going to say I'm going to quit. But you really look at that after a second round and said, man, let's live the fight another day. But also, I know Mark Montoya put out, I think it was on Instagram, and he is right. Look, I'm not a fighter. I've never been in there. I'm not a coach. I don't know what it's like. But I just know as someone who comments on the sport, who's a fan of the sport, watch the sport all the time, that was just very tough to watch.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. Michael Bisping, as you mentioned, is superb. He has such a strong point of view. He's very confident in himself, and he's willing to take risk on the broadcast, I think, instead of just keeping it simple or playing it safe. So I think it's great. It was a tough watch for sure, and a dominant victory for Mike Davis. I mean, this is a fight card where you had a lot of dominant victories, Jason, a lot of impressive wins and things changing. I mean, it's not just when you talk about the women's strawweight division, I mean, things changed like that. The other note I would mention would be the Rebus McKenzie Dern fight. Mm-hmm. That would be the one other fight I would say is pretty notable because you do have a supreme prospect in McKenzie Dern, someone who the UFC could build around. I mean, maybe down the line, a fight between McKenzie Dern and Michelle Waterson would be something they could go towards. But today against Amanda Ribas, she just could not bring the fight down to the ground, and that spelled disaster. Ribas outstruck her, and for Mackenzie Dern, it was a clear weakness in her game. We all knew it because she was coming from such a strong background in jiu-jitsu, and unfortunately, this was a failed test for Dern, but this is still early in her career. But this was absolutely a big-time road bump for Mackenzie Dern.
I think the thing when you watch Mackenzie Dern, and look, it's amazing the fact that, you know, 4 months ago she delivered a baby and now she's back fighting. But I think the one thing that you really sticks out with her is just these looping, you know, punches that she's throwing that she's hoping to connect on. I think that she's just got to get with the right boxing coach to really, you know, square up that stand-up aspect of her game. And look, I by no stretch do I think you should cancel off Mackenzie Dern at this point. But, you know, you look at both of your jiu-jitsu experts in this fight card, of Mackenzie Dern and Cron Gracie, you see those striking abilities. If you can sit there and, you know, tone that together. But also, I think you got to – in a way, you got to look at Damian Maia. Remember when Damian Maia started to fall in love with his striking? And then all of a sudden, Damian Maia and his team say, you know what? Nah, man, we're not going to play this game. We're going to just take you down, and we're going to submit you. And that's where I feel like if you're Cron Gracie, you're Mackenzie Dern, I know we all love the striking aspect of this sport. But to me, just get the fight to the ground and try to submit him.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have that striking skill if you can't do that. But the game plan has to be bring it down to where I'm really, really, really good at this. What makes me different? All the time in my life, I've invested in this skill. That is what makes you different, and that's what's going to allow you to succeed. But this is a fight where it's just like she couldn't take it to the ground. I mean, it took her to like round two to go for that. But back to the drawing board for Dern. I think she has a bright future ahead of her, and she's definitely a marketable star. I think the women's strawweight division has a lot of positivity going forward. Ribas is a nice addition to it.
Yeah, I think when you look at the rest of this card, I think Davison Figueiredo's win against Tim Elliott is of note. I mean, you got to figure with what's going on with the injury situation of Henry Cejudo. I mean, it would almost kind of make sense that if Cejudo's not going to be ready to go in you know, the first quarter of 2019 and whether he wants to come back to 125, it feels like
2020, man. We're in 2020.
kind of forget these things, but I know, but you know, Figueroa Benavidez for an interim title or a vacant title to me makes all the sense in the world. Marlon Vera very quietly has put on these five straight wins and all by stoppage. You know, Frivola Luis Pena, That fight could go either way for me. I don't think it's a robbery by any stretch of the imagination, but if you score that fight for Luis Pena, I probably agree with you.
Yeah, it comes down to how you score round one. You could have scored it 10-10. I mean, that was a close contest. I mean, round two and round three were for each other guy, and for Vola Pena, close fight. And then Eric Anders looked pretty good. I mean, I had a unanimous decision for him. I feel like I don't really get the split call there, but his stand-up looked good. He kind of slowed down towards the end, but if you get interviewed by Jason, it's not always a curse. Sometimes you go out there and get a victory.
I will tell you this. It was, you know, as someone who does a lot of fighter interviews, there's a difference in interviewing a fighter on the phone, on Skype, and in person. And, Tim Elliott really opened up a lot to me. You know, we talked about, the passing of William Joplin, who he was very close with. He talked about the story about him getting the fight against Juan Archuleta, and says, he goes, you know, they really don't know at the point of when William Joplin, got pancreatic cancer. Obviously, they know when he was diagnosed with it. But also, talking about, quitting drinking, he says, hey, I'll have a beer every once in a while, but he goes, it's not like what I once was. And I thought he was just very open and honest. And and I thought Eric Anders, doing a little training at Fortis MMA, I thought that was kind of interesting as well. But overall, it was a fun fight card to watch. I had a chance to watch that yesterday and, look forward to UFC Boston, which is coming up this week. Of course, we are going to preview that card here in a little bit, but do want to let you know about this week's presenting sponsor, Aroman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or, sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. You're going to get it straight there, free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet, and getting started is so simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
And, of course, as Daniel said, just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's MMAReport to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And we appreciate their support of the MMA Report podcast. But right now it is time for the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Morgan Hickam, who fights on Saturday at Valor FC 65. Then you'll hear my conversation with Kyle Lee, who's also a part of that card. Our final conversation will be a fighter who trains out of Jackson Wink in Albuquerque, Aileen Villalobos. So here's my conversations with Morgan Hickam, Kyle Lee, and Aileen Villalobos.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a fighter's going to have her second professional fight come up here. Valor FC 66, November the 1st in Knoxville, Tennessee. Morgan Hickman. Morgan, I appreciate time. One of the things I was checking out, and anyone knows Knoxville Mixed Martial Arts Academy knows about the Turners and what Taylor has been able to accomplish. Do you get motivation from seeing what she has done and how she's elevated herself, especially over the last year or so?
Oh, yes, definitely. Taylor is incredible. And, you know, she's also a mom. So I think that really motivates me because I'm a mother of three. And, you know, a lot of people try to tell you, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. You're a mom, you know. And so seeing Taylor's drive, and even when, you know, she went through some hard times and people told her she should quit and just, you know, just be a mom and stop fighting. You know, she kept pushing through that. And so, yeah, I mean, she's totally motivated me and inspired me.
Has there ever been a point where someone has, you know, maybe made that, hey, why are you fighting your mother? Was there ever like a general thought of, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, you go through times like that where you doubt yourself. Like, you know, especially I lost my pro debut. So, you know, a lot of people tell you, see, you should just stop now. You know, it seems like it's always after you lose that people are like, oh, you should just, when you're on a roll and you're winning, people are like, oh, you're doing great. Keep at it. And then you lose, they're like, oh, you should just stop now. So, yeah, you know, and it does. It takes a lot of time and energy training. But, you know, the good thing about it is my kids also do MMA. So we're down there at the gym together. So, and I enjoy watching my children do it. So I don't think it takes away a whole lot from them. You know, we work around our gym schedule, like coming home, doing homework so we can get to the gym. And, but you know, seeing my kids get excited about MMA has really inspired me to keep doing it too.
I know one of the things Taylor had told me a while ago, she's like, you know, I'm in a fight. I've got so many people around the gym that are like, hey, you need me to watch your kids. You know, I can help you out that way. And kind of that Knoxville MMA, you know, family, you know, I do work in the NFL and we talk about our Buccaneer family of, you know, we all help each other out. Is that what kind of really is the core of that team, is that you're a family and everyone's in it to help each other out?
Oh, definitely. I have never in my life seen anything like how it is at KMA. I mean, it's everyone works together to take care of each other, especially if one person has a fight or is in the middle of a fight camp. People really come together to try to help that person. Just like, and you know, we all take care of each other's kids. That's what we say. You know, it's like I'm always, you know, getting onto somebody else's kids or they're getting onto my kids or whatever. So that way, you know, if Taylor's out on the mat, you know, and she's getting ready for a fight, we'll try to watch her kids and keep up. So she doesn't have to take time to get off the mat and, you know, go see what her son's up to or whatever. And it's vice versa with me too. Like I have people that are trying to keep my kids in line so that I can train. And but yeah, we all love each other and care so much about each other, you know, and that's what's amazing about it is that, you see teammates sacrificing for their teammates to make their teammates better or, you know, whatever, however they can to prepare them for a fight.
You mentioned about pro debut did not go the way you wanted, and it was quick. Is it simply one of those things of, okay, it happened, I just got to move past it? Or is it kind of in the back of your mind of like, hey, that's what happened the last time I was in there?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, it didn't hit me for a long time after. I was disappointed at first, not so much disappointed that I lost, but just disappointed that it ended so quickly, that it went the way it did. You know, I was like, I was okay. I've always said I'm okay if I lose, I feel like I get to perform the way I wanted to, or at least that I put on a good show. And so the fact that it ended so quickly and I didn't get to do anything, you know, that bothered me. But, at the same time, it was an eye opener. It's really helped me to realize that I've got to be able to keep my chin tucked when I, you know, what happened was that I threw a cross but she just came right over top of my arm, clipped me with a hook and then got me with another hook. And so, you know, that's helped me. So I've always kept that in the back of my mind a little bit because, you know, it does make you better. And so, but you know, I'm not upset over it as far as, you know, they say it's the losses that you carry with you, and it is true. But, you know, I enjoy fighting, and I realize that sometimes you lose, you know? And so I've not let it get me down. I've not, you know, been really hard on myself over it, you know? So I think that I'm doing this because I enjoy it. I love to fight, and whatever happens, happens, you know? I'm just going to keep on doing my thing, though.
Do you remember the moment that you're like, I really enjoy this? Like, was it just when you just kind of got into the gym and you just kind of started training? Was that the moment you realized it, or did it maybe take an amateur fight or two for it to really come together?
I enjoyed it when I was training, like leading up before I ever had a fight. And, but I was so hooked after my first fight. Like I got in the cage and I was like, this is where I belong. Like I belong here. And I enjoyed every second of my very first amateur fight. Like it was just, you know, it went to decision. But I mean, the whole time I just felt great. And I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, this is where I want to be. And I enjoyed it. So yeah, I'm like, I'm so hooked.
And now you got this one against Jamie Driver. What's kind of your overall, is there a thought process, a mindset heading to this one that maybe has been different than, you know, either your one pro fight or your four amateur fights?
Not really. You know, I know that Jamie Driver, I'm going up a weight class for this one. So I think I'll probably feel a little bit better because I won't have to be cutting as much weight. And, but I'm excited. I'm just excited to see, I try not to think too much ahead because, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you can build things up in your head too much. So I don't try to like think too much about it because you never know what your opponent's going to do either. Like she could have changed a lot since her last fight. She could have been working on more things. And so I'm just excited to get in there and kind of get a feel for what she's going to do. And that's all. I mean, I don't really go in with a game plan. Usually I'll watch their videos and stuff. Sometimes I don't. So, yeah, I'm excited to see if she's changed any as a fighter, you know, from her last fight. And, I'm just excited to get in there.
Would you say it's like the game plan's read and react? I mean, is that about the best way to describe it?
Yeah, that's what I do. I usually get in there and I don't start thinking too far ahead of what I'm going to do until I can get a feel for what they're doing. And so, yeah, I don't think too much ahead of it. I don't go in thinking like, I'm going to do this thing and this is my game plan. I just get in there, see what they're going to do. And then I react.
I've talked to so many fighters about this, like that first, like 15, 20 seconds of a fight. Is there just mm-hmm. something in particular you're looking for your opponent? Is it how she's standing or maybe it's like, hey, in the footage I saw, she came out this way, but now she's this way. I mean, is there something particular you're looking for?
Not really. I mean, yeah, I guess in a way. I just want to see usually the first few seconds I'm trying to figure out how aggressive they are. If she's going to move straight forward, if she's going to be more patient and kind of wait for me to move forward. That's the only thing I'll look for. And then I can start kind of coming up with like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to wait for or whatever. But yeah, that's the only thing I look for is usually how aggressive is she moving forward or is she waiting on me? You can kind of tell like what kind of, how the fight's going to go usually in those first, like you said, like the first 20 seconds, you can kind of see what their game plan is.
I mean, as we're talking, we're just under a month before this fight is going to take place. So what is the next 3 weeks like for you?
I'll just be at the gym usually twice a day training. Doing my cardio and, you know, it's always a mental game. It's like a mental thing leading up to the fight, you know, cause I'm always in the gym, always training like my body, but it's like the mental toll that it takes when you have a fight coming up, you know, you like, you kind of obsess over it. You start thinking about it all the time. And like, you know, I'll like lay in bed at night and like start playing through my head, like everything that could happen in the fight. And so, you know, that part is exciting and you feel a lot of emotions. It's just like an emotional roller coaster the weeks leading up to a fight. And then you'll even think, like, why am I doing this to myself? You know? And but I love it. I love the how I've learned to like calm myself down because sometimes you get nervous, like you'll start thinking about things and but yeah, just the mental roller coaster is kind of stressful. Like I can handle all this the physical, like work that I put into it. It's the mental toll that it takes. So
fighters always talk about there's something you have to have in your life to kind of get you away from thinking about the fight game. For you, what is it? Is it pop on the television? Just, hey, let me get my mind off things. Just watch some shows.
I guess cause I have kids. I'm so busy with them that I don't have anything else that I really do. I know a lot of people have, you know, other things like other hobbies, like video games or whatever. But I stay really, really busy with my kids. And so, yeah, I think that probably keeps my mind off of it from stressing about it, you know. But like I said, I like to sit and visualize a lot. So, like, I usually wait till I go to bed at night. And then sometimes that keeps me up, like I can't sleep. So I'm, like, visualizing everything that could possibly happen in a fight. But it's good. I think it's a good I visualize it so that way if it does happen in the fight, I'm like, oh, I've been here. Like, I've been here in my mind, but, you know, I've been here. And so it keeps me from freaking out, I think, when I get in a cage and something happens or something goes wrong. I'm like, it's okay. I've been here before. So
you mentioned about your children are in martial arts as well. When you see them in the gym training, are you more nervous watching them just, you know, train in the gym than you are for your own fight?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You know, I get really excited watching my kids when they're training and, yeah, it's something as a mother, you know, like watching your child. Like I remember my kids did a jiu-jitsu tournament and this kid had one of my son's back and was like, you know, had him in a rear naked choke and just like how you feel as a mother, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm letting this happen to my child, you know, like just, it's part of me to want to protect them, but I know that it's good for them and I can't protect them for the rest of their life. So,
so if they come and say, Mom, I want to be a professional fighter, you're completely on board?
Oh, yes, I would support them. I kind of like, I hope they don't ever want to fight, but I would totally support it if they did. You know, I can't tell them no that I don't want them to do it because I know how it's been wonderful for me and I love it. But yeah, I mean, I hope that's not something they want to do, honestly. I love that they train. I think it's great for them. You know, I think it's good. I think all kids should do it. And it teaches them good, you know, discipline and respect and self-defense. But yeah, as far as my kids, if they don't ever want to get in a cage and fight, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Final thing, Morgan, I appreciate time. Have you ever thought about what your life would be like without martial arts?
Oh, yes, because I know what it was like before I found KMA and I was a hot mess. And that's what I say all the time. I'm like, KMA saved my life. And I've told Eric Turner that. I'm like, you know, I tell Eric, I'm like, you saved my life. You're my best friend. And we say it as a joke, but it's kind of true. And KMA has been wonderful. Like the friends that I have made, cause I came out of a really bad divorce, just a horrible, horrible marriage. And, I was super lonely. I got divorced. And I was like, I have no friends. I have nobody. And so I sat in church one day and I prayed. And I was like, God, please send me some good, strong women. I need, like, you know, women in my life that are true friends. And so, like, a couple weeks later, I ended up down at KMA. And now, like, everybody down there has become like my family. And I love all the female fighters. We all, you know, we get together for coffee dates and lunch dates together all the time. And we really push each other. And it's been wonderful for me.
And, of course, we get to see your fight here in November, the first Valor FC 66. Morgan, of course, let everyone know they follow you on social media, those sponsors helping you out. Anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Okay, yeah. I would like to shout out to Shannon Young. You know, she's also a pro fighter, but she also owns Total Ascent. So she does all like my clothing for me, like prints all my stuff for me. And Pike House Coffee also is one of my sponsors. So I'd like to thank them. And just, you know, I think that's it. But, and of course, Eric and Taylor Turner. Taylor helps me with my diet. Shamir Peshewa does all my strength and conditioning. So she keeps me in fight shape all the time.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to make his professional mixed martial arts debut Saturday night, Valor FC 65. In Nashville, it is Kyle Lee. Kyle, man, I appreciate the time, man. We're talking. It's Tuesday afternoon. We're fight week, man. What's kind of the mindset right now as you're preparing for Saturday night?
You know, a lot of like, you know, game planning going on in my head, a lot of like focus on nutritional and make sure that my weight's on point and stuff like that for the cut. I just got a vitamin B shot, and I just got off work early because they know I'm fighting, so they're letting me off, and I'm taking off Thursday, Friday. I'm a trash man by day, if you don't know. So,
what's the coworkers think about you being a mixed martial arts fighter?
A lot of them like it. A lot of them come out and watch the fights, so they're pretty into it. They either like it or they don't.
Looking at your Tapology, it has you 5-0 as amateur, 2 submissions, a 3 decision, amateur debut coming in 2017. Obviously, everything's gone great.
6-0.
What ultimately made you decide that this was the correct time to turn professional?
I mean, honestly, I've been training almost a decade straight. I'm 32. It's really like now or never. You know, either go pro and take a big swing at it, you know, never know how far you can hit the ball. You just got to swing the bat.
And of course, you're taking on Bubba Cruz here. It's also his pro debut. You know what, you know, obviously you both kind of in the same position here, pro debut, but what's your overall thoughts of Bubba as an opponent?
I mean, he's a great fighter. He's fast. He's explosive. He's got great kicks, punches hard. Good judo throws, good grappling. I think he's overall a big, great push for me as a fighter and push me as a, you know, and learn from it in any way. So
you mentioned about all the things that you believe he does great. Is there one aspect of his game that you believe stands out above everything else?
I mean, he definitely does kick fast. I've noticed that in his fights. So definitely his kicks, but, you know, I mean, I'd say that's it. Just he's just fast, strong. I mean, obviously. So I'm looking, you know, to avoid getting hit by him.
I know they call you Crazy Kyle. So how did the nickname come about?
I started teaching fitness classes at this big giant gym downtown Nashville. And the first time I ever worked out there, I took 2 classes back to back and like an hour class each. And then also the way I taught was kind of crazy. I did like spinning kicks cause I had a Taekwondo base and, they just kind of said it and it kind of stuck and I put a K on the front of it and now everybody just kind of likes it. So I just keep saying, I'm going with crazy, you know?
If you were not a martial artist, what do you think you would be doing? You know, obviously besides your day job, is there anything else you think you'd be doing if martial arts was not in your life?
I mean, I always loved baseball. I always had a dream to play like Major League Baseball. I played center field growing up, first base. Loved that. Wanted to play for the Braves, you know, growing up in high school. Wanted to run off and be a movie star and be off in California, but instead I'm in Nashville. Nashville, like, right behind me.
In terms of your baseball abilities, what did you bring from the diamond into mixed martial arts? Is there one physical attribute you believe has really helped you?
Definitely hand-eye coordination was big, you know, growing up, and throwing a ball, swinging a bat, that rotation, the pivot, the punch and the pivot on the rotation, the overhand. Yeah, I mean, I just have a natural right hand because I've been throwing a baseball since I was a little kid.
You mentioned about it was a now or never type situation in terms of making your pro debut. But do you have any goals set for yourself over, the next 12 months of what you want to accomplish in this sport?
I mean, God willing, as far as it'll take me, you know, maybe. I mean, I think Bubba's a game opponent. I think a big win over him would project me into the pro level of, you know, even further. And that's what I love about fight. I love about this fight is he's such a tough guy that if I can finish him in a dramatic way, it's going to send a message to a lot of people. You know, I mean, as far as I can take it. I don't know, bigger fight leagues, whoever comes calling, you know, I need to get an agent. I don't even really have an agent. I just kind of managed to get this fight myself. So I'm kind of my own manager, ironically, you know.
What do you believe a key to victory is for you in the fight?
You know, just really work my game plan. Just do what I know I can do. Stay calm. Stay calm, I think, is the main thing. Stay off the center line. Don't just stand there and trade with him, especially in the beginning, you know.
In terms of staying calm, is that something that has ever been an issue for you in the cage?
I mean, definitely, like, years and years ago. I started doing kickboxing, like, years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And, yeah, I think adrenaline dumps, you know, that's a real thing. So, I've seen Bubba kind of dump out, it looked like, in a couple of his fights, one of his losses, I think, even just because he got tired, kind of. But, like, I know that feeling, and I see it in my other fighters. You can try to hide it, but I can see it. Like, if your legs are rubbery after one round that wasn't really that hard of a round, it's that adrenaline dump coming at you, so.
I'm going to be talking to a guy that I know you're familiar with, Seth, later on in the show. He's fighting on this card as well. You know, he's also making his pro debut. Kind of how does the dynamic for both of you worked in getting prepared for this fight card?
You know, me and him's been working together on and off for 4 or 5 months. We just meet up, do mitt work, kind of talk theory of, like, our styles together, and we always give each other something from it. So that's the awesome thing with him, is he's done martial arts for so long. He's very diverse and very unique style himself, but then I've brought things that I've learned from different styles throughout the years, boxing, Muay Thai, you know, that he was like, ooh, I really like those things. So I think me and him really have helped each other quite a bit develop just as fighters. So I'm really excited to see him fight. That dude is a freak at his weight class and gifted, just very gifted fighter.
In terms of, you know, in that training room, you know, when you're training with various different partners, I mean, is it one of those things for you? It's like, I need to find different guys with different styles to kind of help evolve your game? Or is it a group of guys that you find yourself always, you know, working with because you just know how to push each other's buttons?
You know, it's funny you say that, because at Legion Jiu-Jitsu, I teach there. I'm a kickboxing coach there at night, and I teach fitness at a fitness gym. And, you know, it's funny is that the guys at Legion, you know, I'm developing them into, like, my style, but I definitely love cross training. I love finding very unique people every Sunday, almost every Sunday for the past 2 years. I've been going to Nashville MMA and sparring with those guys. And definitely that's what makes all of us better after putting in the years of work with each other, is that you evolve each other and you change each other. You should all be changing, and so many different styles up there and different guys. Like, even when I went to AKA this past summer in California, Cain Velasquez's gym and, you know, all of them. And, man, yeah, the styles were just amazing. There was some rushing guys that just used brute strength and force. You know, and then I just so many different techniques that you definitely, that's what I think in general makes you better as a martial artist. Like even doing jiu-jitsu tournaments, you see how people play different games in jiu-jitsu that you might never came across until you actually see it and face it. So definitely that's what makes us all better. That's why I'm excited about fighting Bubba, because it's going to make me better, because he's a great fighter. I'm a great fighter. We're going to make each other better.
And, of course, I look forward to seeing this fight come up on Saturday night in Nashville. Valor FC 65. Really appreciate time. Look forward to seeing that pro debut. Of course, let everyone know they follow you on social media. And if there's anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours, man.
All my coaches at Legion Jiu-Jitsu, Sean Patton, Gabriel, Logan, thanks for all y'all do. Awesome. Pepper Boxing, forget me where I am. Man, Fit Rev in Hendersonville. If you haven't worked out in a fitness boxing class, it's crazy awesome. Come take my class bag with me. Don't get punched by me. That has to be about it, man.
Awesome, man. I appreciate the time. Good luck on Saturday. Go ahead.
I said, I also like to thank God first and foremost for even letting any of this happen. So, I mean, it's just a dream come true just to be a pro MMA fighter. So that's awesome in itself.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a fighter's going to have her second amateur fight coming up here at Cage Aggression, number 26 on November the 2nd. Aylin, I appreciate the time. First time we've had a chance to speak. How did you get involved in martial arts? Was this something that as a you know child, teenager, you kind of got involved in martial arts, or did it come later on in life?
I've always been in martial arts. I started when I was 7 at Chavez Dojo here in Albuquerque. It was really big at the time. It still is. It's just like karate and kickboxing. So I started that at a young age. And then I showed interest in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So after, at the age of 12, I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and did all the kids systems. And then once I was 16, they gave me my blue belt. And then currently I am a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Gracie Baja Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy.
So at what point was the decision made, okay, I'm going to take an amateur fight? And was that something you decided, or was that someone inside your team that said, hey, how about we have an amateur fight and see where we can go from here?
So I was out for 3 years because I have shoulder surgeries on both of my arms because of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, just rolled wrong, didn't really take care of it how I should have. So that put me out. And then this year in February, I was kind of like, you know what, I need to stop. Like, I need to get back into it. Like, I want to make this a career. I'm like, I want to become a UFC fighter. Like, I really do, because that's been my ultimate goal. But I've just kind of been postponing it because I was just so scared that it's going to happen again. Like, I'm going to, like, pop out her shoulder again and stuff. But I was like, I have to go back into it. So I went back into it in February. And, like, my parents supported me. And, like, they're like, yeah, like, do it. So I came into Jackson Wink, and they accepted me. And it's, like, family here. Like, everybody takes care of each other, and it's amazing. And so I started hitting with one of my coaches, Seth Beta, and then we were actually supposed to fight on August 13th, I believe, or 28th. Yeah, August 28th in Denver, but the girl pulled out. So we were in fight camp, and, like, the week before she pulled out, so I was like, oh, like, cool. I'm all, let's look for another fight. Like, I'm in fight camp, my weight's down, everything's good. So we ended up finding another fight in Bishop Promotions in Louisiana, and the girl was 2-0. So it was a challenge going in against a 2-0 versus a debuter.
Is there anything that you remember about your amateur debut? Like, was there something fight day during the fight that just sticks with you?
Since I've been, yeah. So after the fight, like, right, we were still in the cage and stuff, and then, like, the song comes up, and I just look like a ring girl, like, just, like, waving around and just doing the walk. And I can't, like, forget that walk. But, like, during the fight, like, in my head, I was just kind of like, I have to, like, keep going. The girl, she was in the military. She was a mom. And it's her hometown, you know, like, she didn't want to lose. But I'm on, neither did I. I'm not going to travel a long way and lose. So it was a battle, especially since she, that promotion was promoting her. So, like, I wish I would have finished the fight, but I won by unanimous decision. So a win's a win.
And you're traveling here once again for another fight. You know, Claire, she's 1-1 in her career. I guess, you know, do you kind of look at this traveling like, hey, this is going to get me ready for when I get, you know, turn professional and, you know, I'm fighting for the bigger organizations. Is that one of the ways you're viewing kind of your amateur journey so far?
Yes, like, I'm taking my amateur journey as, like, if I was a professional, you know, like, I have to act accordingly. Like, I just can't be like, you know, F this, F that, F you, you know, like, no, like, what they've taught me here at Jackson is always act if you're on camera. Mm-hmm. So, your best behavior, best attitude and everything. So, that's, like, one of the things I'm very thankful for Jackson here, that they're helping me. Even though I'm an amateur, they're treating us as professionals. They expect so much from us. So, yeah, like, I'm treating my amateur career as a, like, if I was a professional.
Obviously, you're expecting to go out there and get the win. Is there something else about this fight you're expecting to happen?
I really want that win. I'm really looking forward to get a TKO. But, I mean, sometimes you can't look for it. It comes to you. So I just have to wait for it. And if it's there, if not, we're getting a submission.
You know, because of obviously you mentioned about your jiu-jitsu background here. Do you kind of feel like that, you know, fighters kind of find that out about you and they're like, okay, we don't want to play down in that world. And maybe part of your goal in this fight is to show, hey, yes, I'm dangerous ground, but you got to understand what I'm bringing, you know, on the feet.
Yeah, like, so a lot of people don't know my record. So I'm a black belt in Kachukimbo, a black belt in Kimbo. There's different styles. And then my record in kickboxing is 11-1-0. So I'm a very well-rounded fighter. I just, like, what we've been working on is, oh, okay, you have kickboxing, but now MMA striking is different than kickboxing. Like, the distance is different. You have to keep a frame. And then in jiu-jitsu, I'm like, you're great in jiu-jitsu, like, but now we have to incorporate into MMA jiu-jitsu. So, like, definitely, like, people finding that out about me has, like, backed out a lot of fighters. And then just, like, being under Jackson Wink also has, like, a lot of fighters backing out. So, it's been a challenge trying to find a fighter fight.
I've heard that from so many amateur fighters. They'll say, you know, there could be a time that you show up on weigh-in day and then magically the opponent doesn't show up. Is there at all concern of maybe the amateur career could be short just because if I go pro, at least I know someone's going to show up and fight?
Yes. I'm considering going pro next year on March. So hopefully I can get at least 2 more fights in this year or 1 more fight in after this one. And then next year in January, it will be hopefully my last amateur fight. Then it will go into a professional career.
And, of course, this fight is going to take place on November 2nd. I really appreciate time. Good luck here in your next fight and look forward to talking to you in the future as your career grows. Of course, let everyone know they can find you on social media. If there's anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Yes. My sponsor, they've been doing great. I've been using this lotion to recovery after workouts. And the drops, they're ideal. Like, I would very recommend this brand to anybody that wants to use CBD oil. This is one of the best brands out there. Also, if you guys want to give me a follow on Instagram, it's Aylin370Z, Aylin370Z. And I will be putting on a show for you guys November 2nd.
And there was my conversations with Morgan Hickam, Kyle Lee, and Aylin Villalobos. I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. All those interviews were done in video form, so they will be posted up on the MMA Report YouTube channel. But Daniel, it's a rare Friday night UFC fight card, as we have got UFC Fight Night Reyes versus Weidman. Of course, this is one of two events on ESPN2 this week. Of course, on Thursday, we'll have the PFL playoffs with the featherweight and lightweight division. Of course, that'll be on Thursday. That'll start at 8 p.m. Of course, that'll be on ESPN2 and ESPN+. But on Friday night, the prelims are going to start at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, with the prelims on ESPN2. Then your main card starts at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on ESPN2. And Danny, when you look up and down this fight card, this is, I mean, really back-to-back weeks for the UFC where they put together some really nice fight night cards.
Yeah, they really do. And this is a fight night card where it is. There are a lot of intriguing fights, especially on the prelims. There's a lot of stuff to get excited about. But look, man, there's one fight I can't wait to see. It's Yair Rodriguez and Jeremy Stephens.
Did you see Jeremy Stephens' comments yesterday?
No, what did he say?
He's basically saying, I'm going in to kill this guy.
Oh, my God. Dude, I think we're going to do our top five fights. This is my number one, two, three, and four fights because I'm sure there's going to be two other fights that are going to happen before and after the fight card. I mean, oh my God, Rodriguez and Stevens, like, this fight's got hype. I mean, we have like, oh man, I'm so excited. I'm glad they booked this fight so quickly after the last incident, which, you know, is in Mexico. If you know, in Mexico, Stevens got poked in the eye very early on in the fight. The fight was called off. There was brawling. There was fighting and screaming. It was on TMZ. It was a whole deal. And now we get this fight. Like, I am so excited for Stevens Rodriguez.
So here is the quote from Jeremy Stevens. And this was yesterday at the open workouts. He goes, quote, I feel good, cool as a cucumber, calm like a bomb, ready to go off. I'm going to kill this kid. If he don't die, it don't count. That's what I'm thinking. It's always personal. It's always personal when you fight. This kid's trying to take money off my kid's table. What if I was coming into your house, taking the food off your table, and smacking your kid? That's the way I look at it. How would you feel if I was to do that? Personally, F yeah, it's personal. I'm here would be the question. Do you think the UFC's got these two guys in different hotel rooms or different hotels in general?
I think one's in Boston, Massachusetts, and the other one's like in West Newbury, Massachusetts. I mean, you can't put these guys far enough. I mean, these guys hate each other. I mean, it's unbelievable the hate these two have for one another. This is a personal fight. And also, it's going to be exciting. I mean, Jeremy Stephens always brings the excitement. Yeah, here's a fun fighter to watch. And I'm just excited, man. I am hyped for this one. I think it's going to be a very emotional fight. These guys might make mistakes because all they want to do is put the other one 6 feet under. And I just think this is a big-time awesome fight for this fight night card. I think the 1-2 combination that this card presents is a really nice one for the fans. I think there's a huge drop-off after that. There's still plenty of interesting fights, but in terms of what's bringing me to watch this thing live, it's Rodriguez-Stevens, you know. But interesting, you know, Friday night fight card. But I'll be there.
I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to. Usually, me and my buddy Chris, we go out and play darts on Friday. So I have a feeling we'll be playing some darts, and we'll have a couple of little Stellas in our hand, and we'll be watching these fights. But yeah, Yair and Stevens clearly is the fight that has you most interested. Before I talk about the other fights that have me the most interested, I was thinking about this last night. You know the thing we're not really hearing right now during fight week?
What's that?
Greg Hardy fighting. Usually that's a big topic on MMA social media about Greg Hardy and his past. And maybe I just haven't seen it, and maybe it's just me, but it feels like we just haven't seen any talk of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe it's been the lack of promotion of it. I don't know. But absolutely, it has not been a part of the discussion as it has been really every other time. And again, I'm not a fan of Greg Hardy, but it does seem like people are getting kind of tired of talking about it. And so they've just – I don't know if they've moved on or if this just isn't a high-profile fight. It's kind of buried in the card. But again, this dude's on ESPN. I mean, ESPN loves having this guy on, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I expected him to go out there and win by knockout again. I mean, look, I think when you look at the six fights, a part of that main card, that's probably the one fight that I'm just like, the other fights all kind of interest me.
Yeah. They are pretty good. I mean, when you look at the, you know, we can talk about the main event later because I think that's both of our, like, our the second fight we're looking forward to.
Yeah, but, definitely.
I mean, like, Lozon Pierce is really interesting because this is a big fight for Joe Lozon. He's a slight dog against Jonathan Pierce here. Macy Barber is taking on a very tough fighter in Jillian Robertson, but Barber has just so much potential. And it's a real exciting fight. And then Darren Wynn, Darren Stewart, just a nice clash in the middleweight division.
Darren Wynn and Darren Stewart, I think it's just going to be a fun fight. I just think you're going to see two guys going out there and just flinging the leather. I'll tell you, Macy Barber versus Jillian Robertson is actually my number three fight.
Yeah, it's my number three fight also. So we have an identical 1-2-3. I mean, Stevens Rodriguez is one for me. Reyes Weidman two. And Barber Robertson is three. Because the way I look at it, man, from her debut, Macy Barber stuck out. Like, you knew she was destined for great things from the fight to the post-fight promo. And she's taken a really solid fight here in Jillian Robertson, who has played the role of spoiler before. So that's why, yeah, we're on the same wave here, buddy. I have this as my number three fight, too.
Now, in terms of number two fight, Dom Reyes, obviously undefeated, 11-0, is coming to the UFC. Obviously, his last fight was not a great performance, even though he got the win. And now he's taking on Chris Weidman. As Chris Weidman moves up to 205 pounds, I don't know what to make of Chris Weidman at 205, just because of how kind of the run at 185 ended for him. You know, and I keep sitting there and I go, how does Chris Weidman win the fight?
I think it's got to be with the wrestling.
Yeah.
I think he's got to go back to the bread and butter, to what led to his early success in the middleweight division. This is a fight I don't even want to pick because I have no idea what's going to happen. Reyes has all the momentum in the world. Undefeated, skilled, used to this weight class, big guy. Chris Weidman has zero momentum. He's the guy who we've seen reach the pinnacle at the sport as middleweight champion, but we haven't seen him fight in basically like 11 months. He's been in a huge rut, and he's moving up in weight. I mean, all these things spell a recipe for disaster, especially against a guy with an unblemished record who is a tough talent. So I have no idea what to make of this fight, Jason.
And, I mean, the thing about Chris Weidman is, you know, he's 1-4 in his last five fights. The one win was against Kelvin Gastelum, which, if you remember, he was getting pieced apart early on. In that fight before he ultimately get the submission there in the third round. But all those four losses are all by TKO and KO. That's kind of the concern now. Did the weight cut play into it? And now being at 205, that's not going to be an issue? Like, I think that your gut says Chris Weidman, the veteran here, he's got the experience, but God, if you tell me I got to place a bet on the fight, I'd probably lay money on Dom Reyes.
Yeah, I think your brain tells you Reyes, and mine does too, because we just haven't seen it out of Weidman. I mean, we've seen it all the time where guys are on the descent and they just never make the climb back up. For Chris Weidman, this is a hugely important fight. This is going to be the fight that tells us whether or not Chris Weidman has still got it.
Well, I mean, here's my question is, what happens if this fight hits the fourth and fifth round? What's Dom Reyes look like at that point? Because we just don't know the answer to the question.
Mm-hmm. We've never seen this guy, Dom Reyes, pass round three. That's absolutely true. And that could be where things change. I mean, the thing with Chris Weidman is unbelievable conditioning and heart. Has the ability to rally back if he's not finished. So that is something to take into the equation. We could see Reyes look really good early on and Weidman return to form around four and five and get that late finish. I mean, there are so many unknowns here. You know, for Weidman, all of his losses come against some of the best guys on the planet. So it's not like he went out there and went on a losing spree to Joe Schmo. It's Jacare Musasi, Romeo Rockhold, and a tough performance against Gastelum. So, I mean, it's just, again, a lot of unknowns. It's been a while since he's fought. He's had a hard career. He's 35 years old. I'm just interested to see what happens when these two guys get in the cage.
Yair Stevens. We didn't see much of that fight in Mexico City. Man, here's why I'm thinking I'm going to pick Yair Rodriguez in this fight. And let me see if you kind of like my thoughts. Stevens will come in reckless, and Yair Rodriguez will be the smarter fighter, the more patient fighter, and he will just basically piece apart Jeremy with the recklessness.
Yeah, I'm riding the same wave. I think for Rodriguez, he has more of a pivot point. If things don't work out well immediately in the stand-up, I think he can pivot, change things up, and implement either different strikes or potentially more of a different approach. So I think Yair, once the storm settles, I like his skill level in 2019 more so than Jeremy Stevens. That's why he's my pick. But Stevens has night power. I mean, just an unbelievable. It's just a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things that I do kind of feel with Yair is I wonder how much of the leg kicks will be something that he utilizes in this fight, but I'm looking forward to that one. You know, Joe's own Jonathan Pierce is one of those fights I kind of feel like is, you know, and I think we've been saying this about Joe's own for a long time, is kind of, you know, is this the end of the road of Joe Lozon? I mean, I know he has got a great gym up there where, you know, pretty much my understanding is on Saturdays, if you're a Northeast fighter, you want to be at Lozon's MMA because that's where everyone is sparring at. You know, so a big step up in competition, Jonathan Pierce making his UFC debut. He's actually one of the guys, you know, he's from Tennessee, but he moved his training out to the lab in Arizona. But he has ultimately moved from the Fight Lab to Fight Ready, which, of course, a lot of guys have left for that gym. And really is because of a little bit of a coaching change there between the two gyms with Eddie Cha moving over to Fight Ready. So looking forward to that one. In terms of the prelims, you know, I think the fight that really sticks out to me, Daniel, is actually going to be the second fight of the night. That's Brendan Allen versus Kevin Holland. We've seen what Kevin Holland's been able to do in the UFC. Brendan Allen is a guy that, you know, kind of, you know, if you've been watching LFA for a long time, he was a guy that y'all kind of looked at. That's a prelim fight that sticks out to me. Kyle Bochniak, Sean Woodson, you know, Sean Woodson's UFC debut. Of course, Kyle Bochniak, I mean, he goes out there and he's ready to bring the fight to you. That one sticks out to me. And the UFC debut of Sean Brady, it's been a long time coming. You know, I there was a point that I didn't know if this moment would come for Sean Brady just because of, you know, he's got a lot of decisions on his record. I called, you know, his fight, geez, what was it, 2 years ago now at this point? Those are some of the kind of the prelims that stick out to me.
Yeah, two of those fights make my top five. I mean, my number four fight of the fight card is Kevin Holland versus Brendan Allen. I mean, that's an LFA main event. You know, that's an all-timer right there. You have two guys who have ascended to the top of LFA, and now they're in the cage. Both are doing quite well in their careers, and I think Allen Holland's my number four fight. And then the other fight you mentioned that is my number five is Court McGee versus Sean Brady, and it has a lot to do with Sean Brady. Really, really talented athlete. I think this fight will go the distance. McGee is a tough son of a gun. And he's a nice welcome to the UFC for Sean Brady.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of my number four fight, I'm going with Brendan Allen versus Kevin Holland. Five, I'm going to Ron Wynn versus Darren Stewart, just because I think it's just going to be a fun fight to watch. But I'm looking forward to watching these fights on Friday. Should be a great fight night card. Looking forward to it. And, hey, it's a Friday night fight card. Saturday night, I'm going to the Tampa Bay Lightning game. So, it's nice to have a bye week, Daniel, and I've got a weekend off. That's a beautiful thing.
That is a beautiful thing, Jason. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you do something for yourself.
Yeah. We're gonna have a good time. But you know, I mentioned you know, beginning show. Obviously, I was in London last weekend, and you know, Daniel, I get over there, and we land Friday morning, and I really kind of wasn't paying too much attention to what's going on in the world of MMA, but man, you know, I feel bad for the fighters that were on the PFL show last Friday because no one's really talking about what they did. Everything is about two managers. And look, if you sat there and said, Hey Jason, two managers got into it backstage at the PFL event. Okay. I'm going, okay, who got in with Ali Abdelaziz? I mean, that's pretty much the thought. Like, I'm sitting there just going like, and to me, like, you know, and obviously there's a police report out there, and obviously Ali's got his lawyers are making a lot of money right now because he's got his the lawsuit that is in California and related to Vitaly Minnikov and his former management company, Roost Fighters, going after Ali. There's a another charge in Vegas in relation to an incident with Colby Covington, and apparently Ali hitting someone in that aspect. So he's got that. Now he's got this one. I sit there and I look at it from this, like, if you are the PFL, like, this is where you got to look at yourself. And, you know, if you want to see anything interesting, just go to the Caldwell brothers, Twitter accounts, and particularly Malky, as, he is obviously, stating a lot of things. And one of the things he's doing is he is going after Ray Cepho. And if I am the PFL, this is where, if you want to get taken seriously, you better make sure there's nothing interesting going on behind the scenes, because to me, this is, if you're a PFL, you got to be proactive in what happened on Friday and if there is anything shady going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and that is absolutely their priority. It has to be their priority because PFL 7 was a huge event this year. I mean, it was the welterweight quarterfinals and semifinals. We saw a guy in Chris Curtis lose his fight, retire on Instagram.
Quickest retirement.
The
ever.
Quickest tenure. And then, yes, fights in the semifinals only to get knocked out by Ray Cooper, who's going back to the finals. We saw another dude retire in the main event, Glyco Franca, the top seed, losing to David Michaud. I think, look, for Franca, congratulations, buddy. You're an incredible talent, but you're retired and you proposed to your girlfriend. Yeah, just that. You had your biggest star, Kayla Harrison, run through Bobby Joe Dalziel because I guess her previous opponent missed weight. So Harrison's off to the finals. And then you had an upset. Sarah Kaufman-Harrison will not happen. It will be Harrison versus Pacheco. Pacheco go out there, clearly the better fighter against Sarah Kaufman. So now we got Pacheco-Harrison. A really awesome final fight. All these things happen, but we're talking about Ali Abdelaziz punching another manager in the face. And the problem for Ali is he has a track record of being the center of attention in the crowd.
Like, this is what, and look, and obviously Mike Russell's done a lot of reporting on this and other people. There was a great piece on, lowbodykickmma.com or something. Just basically kind of noting about, conflicts of interest. Look, and I'll say this, one of the things about the PFL, and I think it's something that has to be looked at, is you do have to look at Ray Cepho as a matchmaker. The fact that he is a coach at Extreme Couture. And is there any conflicts of interest there between those two? But if you're PFL, you got to get out in front of this. What I did find interesting, it was amazing that once this incident came out, magically all these MMA websites just started posting, recent video interviews with Ali Abdelaziz.
Yeah, got to get those clicks, man. Yeah, got to get those clicks.
But it's, the unfortunate thing for PFL is A, the fact that, this incident overshadowed everything. And the other thing that went awful for the PFL is Sarah Kaufman losing, because now your dream final of Kayla Harrison versus Sarah Kaufman is not happening. And you know, if you're Kayla Harrison, that's a bummer, because that was a fight. But also, did you see the picture of them two backstage?
I did not see the picture. Harrison Dorfer.
You can see a massive size difference between the two. I mean, you look at, Kayla Harrison, who is a 155er. I mean, and Sarah Kaufman, who's a 135er. I mean, you could see the physical difference between those two. But that, to me, is, man, for PFL, that was a night you wished. You wished Sarah Kaufman would have won, and then you have the dream final you have set up. I mean, it's interesting. And, you look at Ali Abdelaziz, and, man, he's got a lot of legal issues now at this point. But if you're PFL, I think this is where, if you're in the ownership and management of PFL, this is where you got to look at and say, one person is overshadowing what's happening with our fighters. We got to figure out what's going on.
They got to nip this in the bud and make sure it doesn't happen again, because it's happened a couple of times now.
It's not good. And I think the situation is going to get uglier than it is prettier at this point. But, the PFL does have an event on coming up on Thursday night in Vegas. It is the lightweights and featherweights. When you look at the seedings of this, we're potentially looking at another Lance Palmer, Andre Harrison matchup, but it would happen in the semifinals. Of course, remember, you're going to have to fight two times to get to that finals. You know, and so that's kind of, you know, Lance Palmer's looking at a rematch potentially there. You know, when you look at the lightweight bracket that kind of sticks out to you, of course, you got Nathan Schultz, who's, of course, the defending champion, takes on Ramsey Ninjam. Chris Wade, Nate Andrews fight is a fight that interests me as well. You know, and so there it's, you know, one thing you do love about the PFL is it is a true sports format. Even though I really wish these were not, you didn't have to win twice in one night to get to the final.
You wish it was spaced out?
Yeah, I mean, look at Magomed Sharipov. You know, yeah. If the guy doesn't have to fight two times in one night, he's still in the running for, you know, to win $1 million. That's kind of, I think that's the downside of this is mm-hmm. when you have a fighter who wins, but then is unable to compete. You know, God, man, that's a bummer, man. You know, if you're
probably the best guy.
Yeah, if you're Magomed Sharipov and you just, God, man, that's tough.
Yeah. And it's $1 million that just isn't going to be there. But, you know, maybe he'll be ready to go in case something goes wrong in the finals. At least he would be a suitable replacement in the finals if somebody gets injured or misses weight or something. But it's a shame. I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, like you mentioned, Nathan Schultz got to be the favorite in the lightweight tournament. Islam Mamedov is the other guy you look at. They'll probably go to the finals there. And then on the other side, I mean, Harrison Palmer, sign me up. I think that's probably going to be the main event of PFL 8.
Yeah. And some other news before we get out of here on this week's edition of the podcast. John Jones, please no contest, to disorderly conduct. This is for the strip club incident that happened in April. He got a 90-day deferred sentence. During that period of time, he must avoid arrest or violating the law, consume no alcohol or drugs, be under unsupervised probation, not return to the scene, and pay court fees. So I guess John gets that out of the way. And then, Conor McGregor's still in the news, Daniel. Well, obviously his name has not been formally put out there. Obviously all the speculation is that maybe he's under investigation again for another sexual assault. Man, if you're the UFC, I'm at this point now, I don't think we ever see Conor McGregor back inside the octagon.
Yeah, I think it's the last time we'll see Conor in the cage until they need the money. And I think we will see him back in the UFC, even though he's had so many incidents that really disqualify any other fighter on this planet. Had they had these incidents, these issues, these offenses, they would be gone from the UFC. But Conor McGregor is the one guy who you look at and it's like, damn, he's going to get an opportunity to fight again.
And the reason that his name has not officially come out is due to the privacy laws in Ireland, where the accuser and the person being investigated, their names do not come out public. But of course, you remember we had that New York Times article earlier this year where they brought his name into it. And, you know, I think one of the things is a silence. Of course, you know, Conor was in court over the Dublin bar incident, which basically, it sounds like the judge is basically saying, get a plea with the person you hit. So we'll see what happens there with Conor McGregor and whether he ever does step back into it. But you do realize we're a couple weeks away from Jorge Masvidal, Nate Diaz.
Dang, it can't come sooner, man. That is the fight to end the year off on. I mean, that is just an unbelievable fight. A couple weeks away. That's a fight where you get all your friends around the television or you all go out to the wing bar and enjoy the awesome fight.
Have you bought your tickets for Ortiz and Del Rio yet?
I feel like they're going to be readily available.
Could be wrong. Did you see the betting odds already out on this?
No. What are the odds?
What do you think Tito is favored by?
Mine is 1,400.
No, you're too high.
Oh, what is it?
Minus 800.
Oh. Should be 14. It should be 3,000.
Would you lay $20 on Alberto El Patron at plus 500?
No. You're just giving away money. I mean, look, Tito's really old, really injury prone, but he at least has a foundation as a good fighter. Yeah. Alberto Del Rio is a pro wrestler.
I didn't out the 30 for 30 on Tito and Chuck debut last night. I've got on my DVR. I do plan to watch that this week to see how that turned out. But yeah, man, oh, God, it'll be interesting when we get to that week of that fight. What is the vibe in Hidalgo for that one?
The vibe is probably going to be, are you going to the fight? Huh? What fight? That's going to be the vibe, man. I mean, we'll see, but it'll get some press. It'll be just to see what the crowd's like, and I'm not too worried about the tickets going sold out. So,
dude,
see what's up.
I was actually surprised UFC got 10K here in Tampa on Saturday night. That was a good crowd for a Tampa crowd. I was mm-hmm. When I saw that number, I was like, wow, that's a nice little crowd, because I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a sense of a lot of buzz in the area. You just didn't see much about the event, you know, locally. But yeah, looks like they got a nice little crowd in there. So yeah, I wonder how many of them indulged in. I believe it's now $17 beers at Amalie Arena.
That is insane.
Now they're 25 ounces.
Yeah,
like that's about the only way you justify it.
Yeah, that's like more than an hour's worth of labor, you know, that goes into paying for that.
It's like, hey, I'm getting two beers for one here.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the way you justify it.
Yeah, so I'm paying $8 for a beer.
It's not cheap, man. It's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's You want to have a, and God, I forget what it was last year. We wanted to get like a Jack and Coke, and I forget the cost. I was like, good Lord.
Yeah, dude, those stadium people, man, they make their money back. You know, they make their money back big time, and because it's the only place you can buy a drink.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's why you just go to the bar before you go to the game, and then you just have like waters, you know, or a Coke or something.
Yeah,
and then wait till after the game and hit a bar after the game.
Yeah, that's the economic plan.
Yeah. But definitely looking forward to watching all the MMA this week. And of course, I do want to thank our presenting sponsor this week, Roman. Be sure to go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on our podcast, Stitcher, Tune In, Google Podcasts, and we should be on iHeartRadio any day from now, just kind of waiting for the confirmation on that, so we're available. And if there's any other podcasting platform you want the show to be on, hit us up there. Hit me up on Twitter at Jason_Floyd or on Instagram at Jason_Floyd, trying to up my Instagram game, Daniel. I put a picture up last night. Do you have a problem that we're 2 weeks away from Halloween and Christmas merchandise is already out?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm walking in Home Depot last night. I had to get a couple things. And I'm like, it was like just rows of Christmas trees.
Unbelievable. Know your role, Christmas. Wait until trick-or-treating is done.
Can't we wait till November 1?
I know. Know your role. Know your place.
Who's buying a Christmas tree on October the 15th?
The most annoying person you went to school with, like, in elementary school. That's like, who it is.
To me, when you're buying an artificial Christmas tree, you're getting it December 26th when they all go on sale because they're kind of trying to get rid of them.
Yeah. If it's not going to change, then yeah. Yeah, that's a
– I have smart. An artificial tree. I didn't even put it up last year. It's somewhere in my garage. It's somewhere.
Yeah, and it still looks the same. So
Look, my garage, it's like literally like just where I throw stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm dreading when I have to buy a new washer and dryer, and I'm like, how the hell am I going to clear a path for them to take the old ones out and put a new one in?
It's you're just going to have to throw it on top of all the junk.
Hey, just throw that there. Yeah. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mm-hmm. I have a feeling I'll probably be cleaning out my garage this weekend. I have a feeling my wife's going to tell me to do that.
Yeah, well, hey, as long as you have a dandy soda.
That's what happens during the bye week in the Floyd household, Daniel.
It's being an adult. It's being an adult. Yeah. Yeah,
you're getting there. You're getting there.
Yeah. 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 One day. A long time from now.
Yeah. But of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at DanielGavonDGG. And of course, we are here every Wednesday, radioinfluence.com, to talk about everything going on in the world of MMA. And of course, if there's any questions, topics, comments you want to hear discussed, just hit us up on social media. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on radioinfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.